Blog Talk Radio.
Monday, this is Gray Eye Smith, and you're listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Louis Wildove. Unfortunately, Louis Wildove is under the weather and won't be able to host the show tonight. Tonight's show is based on picks from the blanket permission list and pieces of open poetry as well. Okay, just checking in the studio. So that's the gist of tonight's show, and I'd like to go to the studio and see if we have any callers, which we do. Captain.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Thomas. How are you? Hello, Thomas.
How you doing, Greg?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I think you may have put up the wrong number because the 516-387-1524 said it was full. So I had to call in on the 515-605-9826.
Oh, I see. That's the number in the studio, so that's what I copied it off. So I'm not too sure what's going on with that. But thank you for giving me the heads up on that.
And, I just figured people should be able to get in. It's always good to have a group.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Thank you for that, Thomas. Okay, I'm going to welcome Laurent to the show. Hello, Laurent.
Good evening, Gray. Good evening, Thomas. How are you both?
Good, thank you. Doing good. And appreciate you calling in, sir. Mm-hmm. Great to have you both. Okay, so Louie put up a different phone number there, so that's great. Thank you, Louie. Okay, I'm going to post the first link, Thomas, if you wouldn't mind when you see it, please.
Okay, be happy to.
Thank you.
All right. The Unseen by Adlet. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. 7881. The Unseen. Open your eyes to feel the blindness of truth, whispering false beliefs and fairy tales. Seeing nothing while watching everything. Observe. Be still while the story folds its arms around you. As one, climb a staircase that is unseen. Steps reach up to embrace the untouchable like a spiral as it circles around magnetic poles, turning and turning while you travel towards nothing. We watch as your stumbles drag you forward, moving toward an unknown, unachievable thing. Some goal, some wish, no longer remembered, and only your struggles remind you you're alive. Bleed as you make sense of faceless fallacies, pouring heart's blood into feigned absolution, forgiveness, a flavor on the back of your tongue as your eyes lie again about which road to follow. End poem.
That was a great read, Thomas. Fantastic read. You know, and this is a deep poem, you know, about how you live life and the fallacies therein. And, you know, you stumble forward, moving towards an unknown, unachievable thing, some goal, some wish no longer remembered, and only your struggles remind you that you're alive. Just haunting in its truth. What did you think, Laurent?
Well, I liked it quite a bit. Titled The Unseeing, right off the bat, she asks us to open our eyes to feel the blindness of truth, whispering false lies, false beliefs, and fairy tales. So she kind of sets a marker there for what life may observe truth as, without really knowing what is truth and what isn't. And she kind of continues that theme all the way through. Asking us to climb a staircase that is unseen, turning and turning while you travel towards nothing. She speaks of spirals and circles around magnetic poles, and stumbling forward, as you mentioned, trying to achieve that unknown, unachievable thing. And it really kind of speaks. You're right about how the way we do go through life, really placing our trust and faith. And things that may be absolutely false. And right at the end, eyes lie again about which road to follow. It's a very uncertain life, isn't it? At any rate, great piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Thomas, what did you think of the right that you read?
Well, I like how she took a nihilistic existential philosophy and turned it into sort of a tale of horror. Because the opening speaks to how fruitless our efforts are to really create true meaning, as if there is some meaning that sits outside of all that we know that we're supposed to be able to access to give truth and reality to what really goes on. So we follow our path blindly in the hope that somehow we're going to achieve the unachievable, moving towards an unknown, unachievable thing, some goal, some wish, no longer remembered, only your struggles remind you you're alive. Then in that last verse, in that line on the last verse, he turns this sort of existential problem of where is the truth, where is meaning, and how do we find it, into more of a tale of horror. Bleed as you make sense of faceless fallacies, pouring heart's blood into feigned absolution. We just struck down religion and struck down education. Forgiveness, a flavor on the back of your tongue as your eyes lie again about which road to follow. I thought that was great. I mean, I know some teachers who might, in some of my philosophy classes, who might get slightly offended, and a couple who might just laugh themselves silly because of the way she turned it into a horror show. Really, really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And I'm going to bring on a couple more callers here. Area code 804, who's calling, please? Oh, that call just dropped.
Oh.
Area code 703, is that Bobby?
Good evening.
Hello, Bobby.
Hi, Bobby.
Thanks.
We're not able to hear you, Bobby.
Oh, swell. Let me try and call back then.
Oh, that's better.
No, there you are.
I can hear you.
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah, I think it's the angle of your phone and where your speaker, where your mic is.
Oh, maybe she dropped. She did.
What?
Oh, too bad.
She'll call back in. She'll be.
The thought is the deed to the action. She said, I'm going to call back. That's what she did.
That's right. Hello, Bobby.
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
I just have one question. Does this game have rules?
No.
Ah, okay.
No.
I wouldn't want to disobey them, whatever they are.
Right? Did you get a chance to hear that poem that Thomas read?
I did not, but the comments sounded marvelous.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in, Bobby. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
I'm going to post the next link, if you wouldn't mind, please, Lauren, when you see it.
Okay.
Okay.
See it yet. There it is. This is by Moonjade, and it's called I Have Laughed and Cried. Amethyst Moonjade. I have laughed and I have cried. I have laughed and cried at the same time. Life is that way. Sometimes we laugh because crying would hurt too much. Other times we cry because it hurts too much to laugh. Then there are those times where we laugh from the absurdity of it all and the pain. Life also goes through those phases of laughter and crying, and sometimes even both. When life becomes absurd or too painful to contemplate, we laugh and cry. We laugh at the comedy of a tragedy as we cry about the loss of that tragedy. They are two sides to the same coin. End poem.
Excellent read, Laurent. And, you know, this is a deeply penned poem, too. It comes off as light and fluffy, but there's, you know, some depth to it for sure. I have laughed and I have cried. I have laughed and I've cried at the same time. Life is that way. Sometimes we laugh because crying would hurt too much. Other times we cry because it hurts too much to laugh. Just haunting lines. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, first, I really love the picture. That is a stunning picture, and perfect for what the poem is. I like how she speaks to a truth that we too often ignore because it I didn't want to say it, are when we're not comfortable when our emotions in a way get befuddled. And I think she speaks to it perfectly when she says those opening lines that you quoted, because there is an absurdity to the pain we feel sometimes that makes us laugh. And sometimes we laugh so hard it becomes painful to recognize that underneath all that laughter is a great deal of hurt, and that we're hiding from it. I just like the way she opened it up and put it forward, on sort of placed it on the table and said, "Look at me, here I am." That takes a certain strength all of its own to pull off. I thought she did it pretty well.
Great comment, thank you, Thomas. And Bobby, what did you think of the poem?
Oh, this is a very visceral write, along with Thomas, that the character on the face and hand of the photograph are just they're a monument to a life lived and a roadmap to everything experienced. And I think that the poem also it says it in its own way. Like I think Twain says that man is the only animal that blushes or needs to. But I think man, I think, is the only animal also that laughs and cries, also because we need to. And sometimes they occur at the same time, like she said. Crying and grief and crying and joy. Either way, it's emotion, and it's something that ever could be compartmentalized, because that happens too often. I think to share our emotions with people is like Tom said, to bare our souls.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Bobby. Great comment. And Lord, what did you think?
This is a very deep subject, and one I can really appreciate. My father taught English, and he taught tragedy and comedy and English literature, etc. But he was fascinated with the whole business of comedy and tragedy, comedy specifically, and was fascinated with the way that laughing can move directly into crying and vice versa. And he used to quote Camus. I'm not sure I can remember, but I guess he wrote an essay, The Myth of Sisyphus, and he used that to as an example of what it means to have to live as a human being from day to day, which is a rather bleak picture, I admit. And within that essay was a defiant acceptance of absurdity. Without resignation should also include laughter, I believe was the quote. And laughter and crying are really interchangeable. It's the absurdity of the moment. It's the sadness of the moment. And I'll tell you, she did a great job with this particular poem because she grasped that essential truth. Everybody leave.
Hello?
Myself.
Hello?
I don't hear
I'm
Ray.
Here.
Oh.
I think.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'd like to welcome Salwa. Hello, Salwa.
Hello. It's very hi, everyone. Bobby, Loha, Tom. Not sure who else is there. Frank, I think, too. So, hello,
Tom.
Everyone.
Did you get a chance to hear the poem, Salwa?
The first one where Tom, I was reading it actually. There was reading. I heard that one and all the beautiful comments. This one, no, I just heard the comment of Laurent actually and Bobby. I have laughed and have cried. It is true. Without life, it doesn't go with one without another. Who doesn't cry and who doesn't laugh in life? This is life really. And so I like how she brought both together. And without, it's amazing how even when someone lose someone in their life, we are sad, we cry, and then there are times when we remember later, we can even smile or laugh, remembering the beautiful things that we, how we laugh together. I really like this poem. Very realistic and beautifully delivered about life. I hope
absolutely.
That I'm on the right one, right? Yes.
Yeah, you bet.
Yes.
Thank you, Sawa. Wonderful comment.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up. It's by Andrew Bittman, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Of course not. Just as soon as I find the sub. Okay. We have, whoops, there we go. Time Marches On by Andrew Lichtman. The hourglass and the clock move only forward, never back. Each second, a grain of sand knocking down the doors of the past in the vast dunes of outer space, tick, tick, ticking at a languid pace as time marches on. When the weight of humanity melts like wax and the candle shrinks to a puddle, it is swept into the sea by the wind as a memory in the record album, the vestige of each man in his time according to the weights and measures of the divine. And then when it's my turn to fade into history, there will come a time when you too will forget me. And time marches on, and time marches on. So enjoy life while you have it. End poem.
Beautiful read. Beautiful read, Bobby. And just a fantastic write on the subject of time. When the weight of humanity melts like wax and the candle shrinks to a puddle, it is swept into the sea by the wind as a memory in the record album. The vestige of each man in his time according to the weights and measures of the divine. Yeah, just haunting. Another haunting, right? What did you think, Thomas?
I like the way he looks at time in terms of a measure of what we've accomplished, and yet what we've accomplished amounts to little or nothing, according to him, because there will come a time when you too will forget me and time marches on. So enjoy life while you have it. It speaks to the fact that time is immutable. And in being immutable, we are at its mercy now and forever.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Lauren, what did you think?
And then when it's my turn to fade into history, there will come a time when you too will forget me. I thought the poem offered such a strong sense of the inevitable, the uncomfortable inevitable. So yes, enjoy life while you can.
There will come a time when you too will forget me. I thought the poem offered such a strong sense of the inevitable, the uncomfortable inevitable. So yes, enjoy life while you can.
There will come a time when you too will forget me. I thought the poem offered such a strong sense of the inevitable, the uncomfortable inevitable.
Somebody's listening on their computer. On repeat.
And it's feedback. Okay.
Yeah. Lawrence was repeating himself there. That was a wonderful comment, Lawrence. And Bobby, what did you think?
I'm reminded of Einstein's comment that time is merely a persistent illusion. And unlike the other three dimensions, it's the only one over which we have absolutely no control except for what we do in the moment. And I think so many of us forget that and live life mortal, and there's always going to be a and this piece reminds us that not only is there not going to be a tomorrow, may not be three of us tomorrow. So it's a beautiful piece. speaks to the volatility of time and memory.
Absolutely, yeah. I agree, Bobby. Thank you. And Salwa, what did you think?
Oh, I love the word time, Mars. I love all the comments before me, but the word Mars really is very powerful. It's like almost like remind me of military. You just keep going nonstop. And there is just beautiful choice of word here. And I agree with everyone. It is a reminder of the reality of time. We can't stop it, but we can enjoy every moment. And remind me of another proverb. It's I don't know if anyone knows this one. It's an Arabic one. It says, "If the time is like a sword, if you don't cut it, it will cut you." So I really, it is so true. If you don't benefit, enjoy every minute and properly, then you will lose it. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful poem. Very rich.
Thank you, Salwa. That was a wonderful comment.
My pleasure.
And I'd like to welcome Lou Wildub to the show. Hello, Lou.
I guess I shouldn't listen to the... I had the radio on because I was trying to figure out who was on, and I didn't realize I had it on, so I apologize for missing up my own show. There we go. Durr. You're allowed.
It was a nice delay.
Did you hear the... Did you get a chance to hear the poem? Please?
Well, I got to hear it on the thing. And, you know, the thing with this is that, you know, time is not something we can get back. And like, it's all the things that we've heard all our life, that it marches on, and the sands and, how the hourglass, it just keeps going until it empties. You know, but what it asks for us, you know, is that... According to how we live our life, how we weigh our life, how we measure our life, what kind of imprint will we leave? And eventually all of us fade into history. This isn't something that's, you know, unless we're famous or rich or something like that. But, you know, we can still love deeply so that this is passed on to our children, our great-grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera. We can always leave traditions and you know, they could always say, well, great-grandma, you know, did this on this day. You know, it's what we make it. You know,
it is.
And it goes fast. It goes really fast.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Leah. And I have the next poem up there. It's by Bartle Bach, and he has a... SoundCloud, so I'll play that.
Supper's ready. Thine is the key, the mystery, an underworld, a private palace, chalice unknown. Who cries when thine's is keeps? Who groans when it is thine own? You think I am lovesick? To a manor born, sworn to keep the secret told? You think I treasure twisted pleasure? Bones of a haggard wolf, tongue of toothless bold? Mold grows feral as blood rose sleeps and the clock ticks down on winesies flown. And my tombstone creepses, slimeses, seeps as the top sticks to the unbeknown. The old cupboard beckons, the raven crows, breath pierces ether, gravestone gold. Ghastly pleasures, parchment letters, lovers, slaves in beggar's rags, corpses sold. but who cries from the haunted deep, where creepsies moan? Who weeps in the long dark hour smother, when Thineses keeps and the earth takes back thine own sad song? Who keeps thy flesh and skin alive in blackened den, in spidery shadows of my glistening glen? Honour grows bitter and cold as moonlight glows forever. But who pines for lovesick widowers then? Thine is the kingdom and silver locket, the prosecution, perilous prophet. Thine is the key to a skeleton's closet or spineless bosom of heaven's pocket. When we dine and supper's ready.
Wow, that was a wonderful SoundCloud. Just beautifully crafted and executed and wonderfully read. But, you know, in his author's notes, he goes, the boundaries which divide life from death are at best shadowy and vague. Who shall say where the one ends and where the other begins? The scariest monsters are the ones that lurk within our souls, by Edgar Allan Poe. Just an amazing work of art here. I really loved it throughout from start to finish. You know, you can see all of this as he keeps it, and it's just wonderfully crafted. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, I like his quick, short phrases and the way they play back on each other so that you get this feeling of life is both plan and chance. And so often, for all that we plan, the chance part seals away what we would have. For thine is the kingdom and silver locket, the prosecution of perilous prophets. This sense of no matter how hard we try to hold on, people steal from us, we lose things, others take them. That for all of the wonder in life, there is this feeling that somehow it never quite serves us the way we want to be served. I like the way his interplay of creepsies and findies, the sense of childlikeness, wonder, but also of capriciousness. Interesting interplay of language to create the effect that he was seeking to achieve. A delightful read.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And, Lord, what did you think?
Two words, blown away completely. I thought it was spellbinding, as was the delivery of Barty. For some reason, throughout the reading, I felt, I could feel a powerful kinship with Tolkien. And certainly in tone, if not in specific meaning, but it was just an approach to the language that he used. I assume the use of some of the old English that he uses in there would honor Tolkien in a manner of speaking. They were both scholars, certainly. Just phenomenal piece. If I had to quote anything, you think I'd treasure twisted pleasure, bones of a haggard wolf, tongue of the toothless bold, mold grows feral, blood rose sleeps, and the clock ticks down on Whimsy's flown. Just, fantastic.
Great comment. Thank you, Lord. And Salwa, what did you think?
Oh, I find it very, I love the performance, and I'm not really familiar with the poet, but I love how he presented it and all the questions. All the questions make you think and really grasp you. I love how also he showed the mystery. He talked in the beginning, time is the key, the mystery, and on the word a private place shall us unknown. He really brought this mystery with his wording and his imagery in the Psalms and so many other imagery. Very colorless. Right.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Sawa. And Lou,
oh,
what did you think?
You know, I really enjoy, you know, how could you not enjoy listening to this man read his poetry? And, you know, like with the Tolkien, you know, I could just see Gandalf talking to the hobbits, you know. It just the wording and the visuals and the pictures, like I really liked, right here is where I really heard Gandalf. You think I treasure twisted pleasure, bones of haggard wolf, tongue of toothless hold, moke or sparrow, blood roast sleeps, and the clock ticks down the windsy flown. I like that. And then this one, my tombstone creeps the slimy steeps and rock and slick into the unbeknown. This is just delightful from the very beginning to the end.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Lee. Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And if you wouldn't mind, please, Sawa, when you see this.
Oh, the honor. I'm sorry, I was trying to comment on his poem. I'll do that later. Sorry. Okay.
That's okay.
Becky at church. I've always wanted more than the shallow water. Minnows, crawdads, and frogs, the dragonfly chases, they are childish things that linger. I know there is more because of this void, this deep well to dive. I've always wanted more time, more laughs, intimate discussions to fill an empty end. The exist is narrow, squeeze joy dry, time stands still in death threshold. I've always wondered how love comes to be with such pain and arrival, why some loves never develop abilities to live, give, and grow. How it stays shallow under the skin, like minnows under the surface of water, always darting away, too small to fill hunger anyway. But like the dragonfly, I chase frogs till they jump into the pond, and I feel the simplest joy in the form.
Beautiful read, Sawa. And, you know, that was a light and fluffy, right? I liked how, I always wondered how love comes to be with such pain and arrival by some lovers never develop abilities to live, give, and grow. How it stays shallow under the skin like minnows under the surface of water, always darting away, too small to fill a hunger anyway. Just excellent lines. What did you think, Tom?
I find,
be right back. Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome back, Tom.
Oh. Yes, thank you. Did you say me, Gray, or do you mean somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
No, you, Thomas,
you.
Please.
Okay. I like the, it's not childish, but childlike, the sense of delight in the smallest things and the wonder that comes with that, so that when she speaks of love in that third vignette, it becomes something where you treat it gently and with a certain sense of awe and amazement, and it becomes a source and a resource of joy. And so I love that last finish, but like a dragonfly, I chase frogs till they jump into the pond, and I feel the simplest joy. It's like her description somehow steals away the fog, the drama of our adulthood, and returns us to an innocence where all of a sudden we see things for what they are, without having them being encumbered by a whole lot of history. I just find this utterly delightful.
Well said, thank you, Thomas. And Lauren, what did you think? Lawrence.
Sorry. I had to run to the bathroom. Can you skip me on this one, please?
Sure, okay. Bobby, what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was, I didn't think it was fluffy as much as I thought it was very straightforward. I thought it was a great analogy. The analogy of the how a shaft minnows under the surface of the water, which is a great parallel to draw. That some people it doesn't go deep. It stays on the surface because that's the only place they let it, because of apprehension or just the lack of capacity. But I like the way that the analogy that environment always wanting more laughter, more love, more life, feeling simple joy, which I think is something that I especially like the last line. It's something that if we're not careful in our lives, we become inured to the simple joys of just stopping and watching a bird in a tree or watching a puppy roll around in the grass, or just something simple. We forget how delightful that can be when you've only had 5 years on the planet, but when you've had 50, we tend to forget.
Well, great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Sal, what did you think?
I really love this poem. I love all the comments too. It just feels like I relate to it. We all want more laughter, more intimate discussion, but sometimes we don't have it. And she said here very well, the exit is narrow, squeezy, show it right, I'm standstill. What you're going to do, you're going to sit there miserable and make your life miserable, or you're going to find joy in other things. That's what I see here, because that's how it translates. But I love the metaphor there, because she said it in the beginning where she says, I know there's more because of this void, this deep well to dive. So we can only dive, or we can really find it in simple things. And I really love this. I really love it. Very, very well done. Speaks to me directly.
Thank you, Sawa. Great comment. And Lou, well done. What did you think?
You know, to me, this was not a fluffy poem, because I was thinking minnow, fluffy, crawdads, frogs.
I was just thinking
unless
the,
you like
the childlike nature to it.
Uh-huh. I'm just ragging you. Yeah, well, you know what it is, you know, that's a good point, because, you know, it's like, when we're troubled with something, we tend to walk. And a lot of us, if we live near nature, we can go to those shallow streams and shallow water, and we try to look for a reflection, an image of, what we're seeing. And, and it's true. You know, who does not want to be in a better relationship? I mean, I've looked at the number one reason couples stayed married for 50 and 75 years is because, one, they learned to forgive, and two, they learned to laugh. Who does not want more laughter? Who does not want more intimacy over a cup of coffee or just talking? You know, and, we go through our life, and, and sometimes we get all dried up, not fluffy, because we don't have that love to fill us out. But then again, the way I look at it, if you look at your life and you study your life and you reflect on your life, you know what makes you happy, and you have to learn to be happy to be alone before you can be happy with somebody else. And then hopefully you'll end up running in that shallow water with empty shoes and rocks, or collecting crawdads and frogs with somebody you love and can share intimate discussions with. And if not, enjoy the scenery.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Leah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to grab the next poem here. And, oh, Julie, I did. It's by Blue Harrison. If you wouldn't mind, please, Lee.
Okay. All right.
I can repost it.
Okay,
oh,
I got it.
Okay.
The Sea in the Pond by Blue Harrison. Wet web of triangle tingle, compass shattered mid-spin, and her world shifts cocked-eye angle as she strives to take cells in, believing this time she's skybound, that all lost things are surely found. Believing this, she's buried by watery mound. Where moon rises, silver bangle, eyes tethered to the heaven, she wraps sea feathers to dangle across her shoulders thin. As the depth dance around and around, and ravenous sirens surround, and the depths dance, and the depths dance, unhinged beauty is newly crowned. She drifts till limbs to tangle from tongue a tidal wind, grins wide as shallow pools strangle, licking salt from her skin. She has no kiss for sun-warm ground, only passion for the sea and pound. She has no kiss. She has no kiss. Lips brilliant with buoyance unsound. End poem.
Beautiful read. And that's based on a quote that there was Isola in a mad hat and a purple shawl pinned with a glittering brooch. She was smiling fixedly in the wrong direction, and I loved her instantly. And that's by Mary Ann Schaefer. And, yeah, I thought it was an epic poem of that whole concept of, you know, being taken away by somebody, you know, not, you know, disconnectedness, I guess you'd call it, for somebody who's not looking the proper way. And I just thought it was beautiful.
Ooh, Grace getting deep. Wow.
You better watch out. What did you think of the pen, Thomas?
Well, I love Blue Harrison stuff. It works it because she always works a nice spiritual angle, as well as a mystical, magical angle, and this combines so much of that. The wet web of triangle tangle, compass shattered mid spin, and her world shifts cockeyed angle. I love the mixture of rhyme and rhythms in that comment. And she takes you into this land where what starts as a simple sailing ship suddenly becomes a transportation into a world of magic and mysticism, where moon rises, silver bangle eyes tethered to heaven. She wraps sea feathers to dangle across her shoulders thin, and brings us to a place where we perhaps have to stop and let go of what we hold to be real and reality and accept the world she's creating for us. And in doing so, find this human being who has perhaps found a way to be present to a universe we don't even know, but where magic abounds and the possibility of being at peace may never come. She has
right.
A kiss on warm ground, only passion for a sea in pound. I love her stuff. I think it's neat.
Mm-hmm.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Lord, what did you think?
I thought this poem was really magnificent. It began with sailing into a different reality, as the first stanza tells of tragedy, but swelling to almost rhapsodic love of of the sea and a total loss of self in the sea, told him in passionate language that flows smoothly as the water flows. Really quite good.
Great comment. Thank you, Lawrence. And Bobby, what did you think?
A very lyrical quality. It's hypnotic. I keep wanting to say lyric, but the style of it, the repetition I can't think tonight. I don't know what's going on. The repetition, the frame, I really, and it lends a melody to the, but the imagery is, here's where I was thinking more of Tolkien. On the last piece, I was thinking more of an old Scottish poem. This one reminds me of Tolkien and the way the imagery is woven together.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Salwa, what did you think?
Oh, I really love this poem, too. I just tonight with great poems. The title, The Sea Impound, and then later where she said it again, Only Passion for the Sea Impound and the Dancing, it made me go a different direction. I feel like she said, get loose some, under her other note, what does she say here? Self-love. So really let yourself follow your imagination. And she wasn't really in the sea. She was in a pound. That's what she mind took me. But she imagined that she was in the sea and salt and just really enjoying her imagination and get lost with this imagination. That's where it took me, and I found it very, very beautiful.
Wonderful comment.
I know.
Thank you, Salwa. Lou, what did you think?
Well, it was an honor for me to read her poem. Her poetry is always beautiful. For me, this was like when Salwa was talking about, how you let your imagination run. You know, you can be anywhere and anything. And what I love about people who write songs and write poetry and write, the imagination and the beauty that they bring. To me, this was so jewel-like, where she says, where moon rises, silver bangle, eyes tethered to heaven, she wraps these feathers to dangle across her shoulders thin, and the depths dance her round and round. And, you know, I don't know if you ever seen a puddle of water or you've been out in the rain and, you know, that burst of happiness where, you know, to give yourself some time and to just jump in the water, dance in the rain. This is just something, I could just literally see her, and it was beautiful.
Great comment. Thank you, Lydia. Okay, I have the next poem up. It's by Brian T. Duffield. It's called Summer Buzzards. The plaintive cry of a buzzard over fields has mown or flattened hay beneath his gaze. He scans with metronomic ease the yields the track and trail of mouse in yellowed haze. Unhurried, gliding over gilded husk, his pupils flex, dilate, and catch a sign, like tarot cards or palms being read at dusk. What growing clouds are morphed by your design? When brittle hours and fragile minutes pass, we seize the harvest, catch our ghostly prey, or slumber through the day with slow repast as flesh from bone is peeled with plucked dismay. The vacant air with heavy silent pause releases me from sharp gilded claws. End poem. And he has a quote in there. It says, I felt my lungs inflate with this onrush of scenery, air, mountains, trees, people. I thought, this is what it's like to be happy, by Sylvia Plath. And I thought it was an amazing poem, you know, very visual and our slumber throughout the day but slowly passed, as flesh from bone is healed with pluck dismay. Vacant air with heavy, silent thoughts, pause releases me from sharp, rolling claws. You know, he was the prey of that, the hawk that he saw, or the buzzard, and that's his telling of the tale. I thought it was wonderfully done. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, for me, this almost reads in two parts, because you have the plaintive cry of a buzzard over fields as mown or flattened hay beneath his gaze, and then he scans and sees the mouse, and unhurried, gliding over gilded husk, his pupils flex, dilate, and catch a sign. But then we have what growing clouds are mortify your design, which he seems to be speaking to a god and a higher power. And when brittle hours and fragile minutes pass, we see the harvest catch our ghostly prey. And then he begins to speak more philosophically about how all of us, in a sense, are moved by the wonder of nature, perhaps. And yet, it is not all gentle, and it is not all wonderful, and it isn't all happy. Our slumber through the day with slower past, as flesh from bone is peeled with pluck dismay. The vacant air with heavy, silent paws releases me from sharp and gilded claws. This sense of we live in a world of incredible beauty, but at the same time, we live in a world of harsh reality and buzzards, you know? And the contrast that he creates makes for a rather dramatic feel to the whole thing. So you get this sense of wonder and dismay, drama and peace, the constant contrast between the two that seems to make up all that life is. Really interesting piece with lots of interesting layers in it.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Laurent, what did you think?
Well, I kind of resent the fact that Thomas plagiarized my entire comment before I even had a chance to write it.
No, it's great minds think alike.
No, so all I can add is that, you know, when I saw the beauty of nature, he treated the end exactly the way Plath would have. It's a little somber, it's a little dark, it's a little painful. Excellent piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Bobby, what did you think?
I found it interesting that it was almost like an out-of-body experience, like he had projected his into this creature and was able to appreciate, train animals' a point of view, which I think is a really, that's a rare gift to be able to imagine like that and see the world from without yourself.
Yeah, I agree. Fabulous comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Salwa, what did you think?
I really felt the same because of the ghostly prey. It just felt like in the tarot cards and just like almost like spirits around him. That's the feeling it gave me. Enjoying, trying to, like, it started with a plaintive cry and then it changed to not with the gaze and become easy, just changing from cry to end up with the vacant air with heavy silent pause. From someone want to let out the scream in the vacant air and just let it out the sound. That's another feeling too that I had with praying and discovering and all the above. Really beautiful read and write.
Great comment, Paula. Thank you. And
my pleasure.
And Lee, what did you think?
What this made me think, and it's the same thing with Sawa and also with Bobby, is that Native Americans tend to transcend when they catch an animal. I mean, I have literally watched hawks and buzzards, and I will literally, I don't know how we do it. I can't explain it, but we go into the, behind the eyes of the, we become the animal. And this is what, you know, what he became. He became the buzzard, you know, it's flying over hills, it's scanning, it's tracking, it's trailing, you know, what we do in our normal life, how we, you know, look for things and how we have to work for things. And you know, and we also look at these animals because they speak to us and they tell us things. And if an animal's hurt or animal's dead or something like that, something's wrong, you know. And just like with everything else, you know, growing clouds, we never know what the storms are going to bring, how long they're going to last. And, you know, will we be prey or are they going to be prey? And, you know, once, you know, the animal leaves our sight, we come back to our, what I call our human thoughts. And, you know, he says, the vacant air with heavy silent paws released me from the sharp and gilded claws. You know, he was being carried along.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful comment, Lee. Thank you. Okay, Lawrence, I posted your poem, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. This is called, I was in a silly mood when I wrote this, so you're going to get a silly poem. It's called Nature's Bucket List. Bluster and bluff, I've had enough, cried spring in a state of high dudgeon. I've called for rain, it's snowing again. Where's winter, that bearded curmudgeon? She caught him at noon, drunk as a loon, imbibing of his black currant wine. You played me again with your leisure demand. Remember, springtime is mine. Winter looked at her, weary, icicles teary. Point of fact, I'm quite ready to sleep. Quite tired enough, I've strutted my stuff. This human won't let me count sheep. The dawn and bunged up the weather. Can't keep essential details together. I don't know where I'm at. Too true. But I've me wine to see me through. Air smells like shit. Too thick to permit clean movement of systems close-knit. And I'm stuck with lows in front and behind. It's okay. Black current eases my mind. Spring pounced, flounced, and sputtered. But no additional words, winter muttered. She swirled her green skirts and decided a long vacation in the Arctic was required. Now I'll give humans a melt they've never felt. Good reasons pay much closer attention. They would learn what is not appropriate to burn, else oceans rise and break surface tension. Flood, fire, and famine they'll know. And if the maker protests, I'll resist. Just not before I've settled my score. Punishment is on my bucket list.
And all. That was great. Excellent job. Beautiful read. Excellent write. You know, it speaks to the personification of nature and the seasons therein. And I thought it was just an excellent write. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, it might get a few people to recognize global warming who weren't willing to recognize it before. There's a certain power that is much stronger than most people seem to recognize. And otherwise, it takes a nice mythic approach and does a dynamite job of making sure that we understand that, truthfully, in the end, for all the winter and spring and summer and fall might have their own minds, we've ruined it for them all, and they're going to come back to haunt us.
Thank you, Thomas.
Well, I can understand getting drunk during winter anyway.
Side benefit.
Wonderful comment, Thomas. And, Bobby, what did you think?
She had to step away.
Oh, thank you. Well, what did you think? Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have to compliment Laurent first for his performance. I think now I understand why you have such a great performance. Your father, earlier I heard you saying how he, tragedy and comedy. Absolutely. I see now why. He passed it to you. An incredible performance. A mix of tragedy and comic at the same time. And really, it shows how much you love nature and respect it and feel horrible about it, what's happening. And it's punishing us in reality. You made it like a joke, but it really is. There is punishment. All the extreme weather that's happening because of the abuse. So that's really amazing, right? And fabulous, actually.
Why, thank you, Selma.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was a great comment, Selma. Thank you. And Louie Wilde, what did you think?
I thought this was just awesome. And I loved his tone of voice and the way he read this. I mean, as soon as he started, I started my cheek. I was smiling so much. My face hurts because I just started laughing because, you know, even though, you know, this is storytelling, but it's so true. You know, everything in here, you made this would make a fantastic children's book because it would teach children and hopefully teach the adults that where are your children going to live once you destroy the earth? You know, so anyways, I totally loved it, Laurent. I loved your humor.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
And is there anything you would like to say about your poem?
It scored a 5.
You really like current wine that much?
No, I enjoyed it. It kind of wrote itself as I went along. The challenge was to make the rhyming appropriate, and little by little, a serious note crept in, and, well, there it is.
Beautifully done, Lord. Yeah, excellent job. Okay, Thomas, I have your write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm taking your risk. I don't normally read poems out in the public until they're at least 6 months old. This one was written today. More than a mist. I sit on the porch, hear the forest begin to whisper. The fish kiss the pond's surface. They think food has come, but it is only the softest of rains. So gentle, it takes the grasses, the earth time to acknowledge they are wet. The sun shines, I find the rainbow as the birds sing in the trees. The world holds its own quiet, seems to caress, so the rain purrs. Even the breeze has paused, so the curtain of waters translucent sparkles with sunlight and continues to fall. End poem.
Off mute, Gray.
Taught me. Thank you, Thomas. I mean, thank you, Lauren. But, no, that was a wonderful poem and an excellent read. I really like the lightheartedness to it. You know, you can feel the world easing off your shoulders as you go through this poem. And, you know, you're taken to the forest and, you know, you hear the birds and you can feel the rain as it falls and see the curtain of water translucent sparkles within the sunlight and continues to fall. Just a beautiful scene and excellent descriptive write, Thomas. What did you think, Lauren?
Well, it's an absolutely gorgeous poem on a sun shower. When you look at the title, More Than a Mist, and it calls it Only the Softest Rains, it fixes the image in your mind. And as he paints the picture with the sun shining and the rainbow and the birds singing in the trees, you can really visualize it quite easily. And the phrase, the world holds its own quiet, seems to caress it so the rain purrs. You get that little background noise of the softness that rains falling on surfaces, and it really is magical, as is this poem. Excellent piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Lauren. And Bobby, what did you think?
Sun shower is the word I was trying to think of when I read it. I remember being about them by my father, and the first time I saw one, I thought, how odd. It's raining, the sun is shining, but there you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost surreal because you're getting this mizzling rain, and yet you're also getting bathed in sunshine. So it's I like the way you portrayed it, Thomas. It's spot on. It's a beautiful experience, and I captured it.
Well said.
Thank you,
Bobby. And Salwa, what did you think?
Oh, being a nature lover, I love this poem. He gave us a taste of the gentle and serene, really afternoon. I'm not sure if it's an afternoon or not, but wherever time you spend there, sunlight continues or must be still day, and how really the effect of the after the rain, how the sun is bright and just beautifully done. The soft rain, the rain pours and breezes. So just beautiful description. Beautiful, beautiful. Lucky you.
Well said. Thank you. Thank you, Bella. And Lou, well done. What did you think?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I did pick up Frank. So,
okay, welcome, Frank.
Poetic Picasso.
This is
just gorgeous. He just literally misted, you know, it made me think of, you know, crystals and diamonds. Just the sun is shining and it shines. It glistens on everything. It's just, you know, it's one of the most beautiful things. And then you hear the birds, and then you just hear it, you know, once it starts dripping, slowly dripping the mist. This was just gorgeous, and I just fell in love with that middle stanza. I just did, you know, those things that, you know, we took such joy in as children and as young adults is something we do as adults still enjoy seeing. And if you hear the cat meowing, it's because he's being bad.
Or he's occupied.
It's snack time.
No, he wants me to. He's going, stop the poetry. Kitty comes first. This is an emergency. Where are the kitty snacks?
Exactly.
Great comment. Thank you, Louise. And Frank, what did you think of the poem? Did you get a chance to hear
it? I have to say that first of all, it was great listening in the background there. I just thought this poem was just remarkable in the sense that it was a very sentient piece. He describes very much in very little details there. You know, the whole notion there of just enjoying the softness of rains, which we all, you know, we enjoy the dewdrops,
mm-hmm.
the moisture. We enjoy the breeze that comes with it. You know, there's so much to enjoy if we actually took time to really appreciate it. And Thomas has a wonderful ability to bring us in with the elements of nature, you know, the birds, mm-hmm. the trees, you know, he has in the water itself that comes from the rain. It's a beautiful thing. And of course, the whole notion of the sparkles of sunlight, which comes afterwards, you know, you see a rainbow as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable just to recognize the beauty of nature when it's just so splendid. If we only just take time to realize how beautiful it is. I think Thomas has brought us a beautiful poem, and he has a natural ability to use it in a splendid way, I would say, metaphors.
Well said. Thank you, Frank. And Thomas, would you like to say anything about your poem?
Well, I would recommend hitting my little blue lines there in the Arthur notes, because the poem by Fudu, who I was trying to maintain a sense of, wrote a really beautiful piece, you know, delighting in the rain on a spring night. And it's good. It's really good poetry. I just wanted to catch that sense of one of those rains that's more like a spray, and it's what farmers love because it doesn't erode anything. It just soaks the earth so that everything around it can really get water. There's no runoff in that kind of rain. And it is the kind of rain where in a distance you can see the sunshine and you can see the rainbow even while it's raining right where you stand. And I do delight in that kind of thing. When I was in Portland, Oregon, where it rains all the time during the winter, I'd get up early in the morning and I'd be standing in the kitchen and looking out the window and seeing the sunrise right near Mount Hood before the rain started, and that just made my day perfect. It's funny how little things change everything.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you, Thomas. Okay, Bobby, I have your poem up whenever you're ready.
All righty. Some of you may recognize parts of this. I took an old brevity and I kind of retooled it for a contest, and it hasn't had any exposure until tonight. So, Garnet Ecstasy. Cleaved, pungent, banana-shaped vanilla pods, provocatively dark, perfumed essence, cascades forth, plunged in the wine, possessing it. Sweet cherry blossoms, luscious berries, freed from their low-hanging branches, float in this goblet, dancing in the dark intoxicant. Heady garnet elixir, he quaffs greedily the chalice you offer him. Your spirit, steeped, darkly provocative, perfumed essence. Your elemental nature draws him to you. He sees your dark or your scarlet silk skirt swirl hypnotically, yet delicate as the blossom of a rose, soft as your skin. Your obsidian gaze through coal eyes, auguring holes into his soul, your whispered, honeyed, dusky words drawing him close. Hand him the glass flooded in crimson liquid, the candlelight dancing through the sanguine fluid. Your smile promises exquisite pleasure.
Beautiful read, Bobby. An excellent write. I thought it was just wonderfully sensual and evocative. You know, your obsidian gaze through cold eyes, auguring holes into his soul, your whispered, honeyed, dusky words drawing him close. Just immaculate poem, Bobby. What did you think, Thomas?
Well, I like the opening with the scent and the wine and the sense of needing to create a mixture, a bouquet of sensory delights, because it fits so naturally with the last half of the poem where you go, your elemental nature draws him into you. And the obsidian gaze arguing holes in his soul, your whispered, honey, dusky words drawing him close. It was almost as if you became the wine and became the magic and became all the intoxication his senses could handle. Really beautifully done. I like the way the opening metaphor became sort of the magic of the whole poem. Beautifully done.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Thomas. Lauren, what did you think?
The use of the senses of the color, specifically that garnet, the wine, the dark perfumed essence, and cherry blossoms, luscious berries, heady garnet elixir, all the way through this, that color keeps washing over me. And I read essentially beautiful language. almost classical. There have already been a couple of quotes of lines I was going to use. I particularly like your obsidian gaze through cool eyes, auguring holes into his soul, your whispered, honeyed, dusky words drawing him again. Again, there's that that emphasis towards dark, but honeyed and dusky, which is a perfect word to use in Garnet. And then the obsidian gaze, the black gaze. And then I saw coal eyes, and I remember that word because I think I've used it at some point in the past. It's one of the older cosmetics, been around forever, and it makes the eyes very, very dark. So it emphasizes that piercing stare that is presented us. Gorgeous piece, Bobby.
Great comment. Thank you, Lawrence. And so what did you think?
Oh, I really love how, Bobby, you draw him not only by the perfume. He was not only driven by the perfume, her sense and her delicate beauty, but also her spirit. And you delivered the sensation imagery really beautifully done. And I really got my attention how you brought spirit, I think, in two different occasions. And this is beautiful because both complete each other. It's not only like physical. That's really beautiful.
Thank you, Sawa. And Louie, what did you think?
My pleasure.
Well, I was listening to Bobby. Came into my head. So the first thing that came in, for some reason, while I was listening to her read, I was starting to crave dark chocolate cordials. I don't know why. Sucking the cherry and that white sauce and the clear liquid, that's all I could think about, especially when you got to the end where you said, you hand him in the glass flooded in crimson liquid, the candlelight dancing through the sanguine fluid, and your smile possesses exquisite pleasure and garnet ecstasy. Woo, that was hot. You know, it just drink each other in with your wine and salty kisses with that fruited garnet, you know, elixir. Lovely, beautiful, Bobby.
Okay, thank you, Lauren. Appreciate you calling in to share your time. But yeah, what did you think, Lou? Frank, what
did
you think?
Well, where do I start here? This is obviously a very sensual piece here. I think that Bobby is just so creative when she writes sensuality. It almost seems that she brings these very, very powerful metaphors, these powerful words that perhaps, you know, some might not understand. But she has an eloquent way of just bringing in those words and to, you know, put them in the right place there. You know, you cannot go wrong with a scarlet silk skirt swirl. That definitely will hypnotize you. At least it will me. And the other thing which I did notice, of course, was something which I'm very fond of, which Bobby knows, and that, of course, is wine. You know, there's nothing, well, of course, there's nothing better than Spanish wine, but we can defer that there. But I did like this poem here. It's very, very, very classic, very central, and it's very Bobby, I would say, if I'm not mistaken there. I think Lou took away my comments there. So, I had to stay with leftovers there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm still thinking about chocolate cordials now.
There we go. Hot cocoa.
I know how to make them. That secret is I know how to make chocolate-covered cherries. I've made them.
Sounds delicious.
There's a distillery near here that makes a thing called Mary Hike, which is far better than Bailey's will ever be. And it ends up my wife's cappuccino with great frequency. It's quite good.
Absolutely, yeah.
So.
Okay, Bobby, would you like to say anything about your poem?
It started out as a brevity, and I saw this contest by Linda MB called Brazen, and Frank, don't look at the picture. No, stop it, Frank. Oh, it's too late. it's this gorgeous, gorgeous red dress, and I thought, oh, I have got to write something to this, and I thought of Garnet Ecstasy, and I always, even though I'd written it a while ago, it always felt like it had more potential than what I'd given it, and so mm-hmm. I trotted it back out, and like a beloved old garment, I started I threw it back on the dress form and tinkered with it and added some sleeves and some lace and some dusky honeyed words and some crimson liquid and some Spanish wine. And I like it better now than I liked it. I liked it before, but I like it much better now. Because I think it looks
fine. Yeah, there so it hums.
It's got substance to it now. Just tea.
We'll go one night there, Bobby. We'll go to Seville and we'll drink some wine.
Only if we get paella to go with it.
There you go.
Wow.
Deal. It's a date.
I'll mark that next time.
Absolutely. Okay, so I have your pen up whenever you're ready.
Does it end at 11:30, the show, or 12?
It ends at 11, your time.
12, you mean 12. Okay. I wasn't sure. I was kind of, I said maybe we can push it to next time. I wasn't sure. Okay. Under the passing time, sous le temps qui passe, where is it? Mes yeux éperdus dans les pleurs ont entendu avec moi un chant tendre qui m'a tourmenté. Hélas, mon cœur ne sait comment guérir ces vraies plaies douces et douloureuses d'amour. Pourtant, mes ailes saignantes savent s'envoler loin d'ici dans un horizon lointain pour cacher mes peines. My eyes distraught in tears heard a tender song. It tormented me. Hélas, my heart does not know how to heal real painful sweet wounds of love. Yet my bleeding wings know how to fly far away in a distant horizon to hide my pain. End of poem.
Wow, that's a heart-wrenching poem, but beautifully expressed. I really liked it in both languages. What did you
think,
Thomas?
Oh, this is lovely. I always think your poems are lovely. There's a softness here, even as the hurt and the drama builds. My eyes distraught in tears heard a tender song. It tormented me. Killing me softly with his song immediately runs into my head. And then, alas, my heart does not know how to heal real painful, sweet wounds of love. How delicate, how soft, how full of a sense of romance, where the drama is sweet and gentle. Yet my bleeding wings know how to fly far away in a distant horizon to hide my pain. It's almost as if the angels are leaving us, these magical butterflies of wonder and delight, and saying, ah, this world is too cruel, you're all too harsh. We need a softer and sweeter language, a softer and sweeter place to abide. Magical, really magical. really
oh, thank you. thank you so much, Thomas.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas. And Bobby, what did you think?
How in the world do you do this? You keep doing it.
You're so kind.
No, I'm serious. It's just some of the sweet wounds of love. I my God, what a wonderful, wonderful combination of words. That center stanza, my heart does not know how to heal real painful sweet wounds of love.
Oh my God, this is just heart, my bleeding wings know how to fly. This is just amazing. It is so delicate. This is like dandelion fluff. This is so beautiful, and it just floats away. This is a great piece. I really like this, and I like the way you formatted it too. It's really lovely, like teardrops almost. I'm running out of adjectives.
We missed you last time in the show. Did you have a hiccup? Because I said, "Where's Bobby?" Did you have a hiccup? You missed Frank.
I was off planet. I'm back now.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, Bobby. And Liu, what did you think?
Well, you know, this is, you know, to me, this was beautiful, as it was heart-wrenching. You know, because, you know, what I don't understand is who are capable of loving for the long term and deep and through thick and thin, through problems, through everything. Why, if you don't love shallow, why would you love me in shallow? You know, and then the other thing is, then you hurt them, and can't you see the pain that you've caused them? Their broken heart. I mean, it's just like someone needs to smack their back of their head. Tell them, wake up, smell the coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Louie. I love you. Thank you. You're so funny. Oh, Louie.
Thank you, Louie. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, definitely. This is a very, you know, this type, and I know that this is a, has me reflecting here. It does seem to be, I'm a bit pensive and serious at the moment, simply because it's always made me think, you know, when you talk about distraught and tears, and you have that song, you talk about a tender song, mm-hmm. there is that sense of memories, attachment to memories, you know, which are very, very much hard to let go. And of course, then you say about the heart, how to heal, you know, the pain, you know, and sometimes when there is that strong bond of love, you know, although relationship is no longer there, it still remains there. It's still hard to let go. And even the distance perhaps is, it only helps for a moment, but it doesn't make it go away. And so it's mm-hmm. made me think tonight of these short verses here. Just how much really when we are no longer in love or actually no longer in a relationship with that other person there, that it's not easy. You know, everyone thinks that walking away is the easiest thing. It is physically. But the whole notion of attachment, which is, the emotional aspect, the mental aspect, it never goes away really so easily. That does take time. And I think that really is so marked in the title, Under the Passing Time. So I thought you did it. You have to make me think tonight there. So and this poem really brought memories to me. So I do commend you on this poem. It was a great.
Thank you so much.
I know you do.
Thank you so much,
you
Frank.
Are the queen. You're the queen of brevities. You say I'm the king of romance. You are the queen of brevities.
Thank you. Actually, I used to write really long, and I think Sama told me, you need to learn how to write short, and since became like that.
Yeah, I can't do brevity as much. It doesn't work for me as much.
Beautiful comments, everybody. And Tawa, would you like to say
Thank
anything
you.
About your poem?
I'm going to say, I guess really you all touch on it. It is when you sometimes, you know, like you, there's something brings memories. It's true, like a song or mm-hmm. anything that can bring memories. And it is, I love all your comments. It's true. Sometimes it's just the why people do this to people exactly, or it could be the other way, women do this to men or men do this to women. So, but it's life. So thank you.
Thank you, Sawa. And Frank, you're very tough. Oh, you would, I'm going to play your SoundCloud.
Good.
It was Saturday night and I was driving by the avenue when I saw you by my side in your little purple Porsche. There was something about the way you looked so fine that I couldn't resist the sexy sparkle of your exotic eyes and stare. I called up to you at the next stop sign at the Paisley Park. You were going much too fast and it was close to midnight when you had seen me and had flashed your neon lights. And I knew that we could ride the sultry winds like wild doves. You blinked at me and hit the pedal and began the seductive race. I was tempted to discover your passion and follow the chase. But your flirtation seemed to be beyond the local speed limit 75. All I could do was try to keep up to the spark from your ignition. When you stopped at the corner of your fancy Beverly mansion, my tank was low and about to hit zero, running out of lustful gas. Yet you told me you could refill my tank and make me go crazy, girl. If I wanted to ride your Porsche all night, that would be all right. So I got in your car and you grabbed the stick shift and put it in third gear, speeding off into the erotic depth of the exploration of the highway until we saw the central stars in the moonlight dance with our lovemaking. I swear I could ride in the passion of that purple Porsche and just grind without the brakes, pouring hot oil, riding to Route 69 behind the wheel. Oh, I swear I could ride in the passion of that purple Porsche and just grind without the brakes, pouring hot oil, riding to Route 69 behind the wheel. Oh, my little purple Porsche, my sexy little purple Porsche. Mi amor, mi calor, ole, ole. In the poem.
Hello.
Everyone quiet.
Hello.
Sorry, Frank. That was a beautiful
right,
excellent
right.
Yeah,
it was inspired by the little red Corvette there by Prince in the background there. That's another tribute of mine for him.
Absolutely. But no, it was beautifully crafted, you know, sensual, engaging, storyline throughout. What did you think, Thomas? Hello, Thomas. Did we lose Thomas? I think we did.
Because I was coughing.
You got two phone calls, two phones.
I'm back.
Tom, you're back? Okay.
Yeah, I just had to... muted because I was coughing a whole lot. Like I said, you couldn't hear me. Prince has the little red Corvette. Frank now has the little purple Porsche. I'm looking forward to seeing it in his garage. this is terribly, 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 terribly sexy in only the best possible ways.
Mm-hmm.
Which of course, is what we look forward to when we hear Frank Reed. And we this one is an utter delight in that fashion, and I'm sure everyone was well pleased. So it does seem a little bit, you know, rushed when the speed limit's 75, and she was going past that. But delightful from start to finish, and classic Frank from the get-go.
Well, there you go, my friend. We all take Route 69 sometimes, don't we, Thomas?
mm-hmm. Right. Bobby, yeah. What did you think?
I'm disappointed. I thought it was inspired by me and my... I thought it was an homage to me. But, you know, when he said purple, I thought this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I could see the parallel between a little red Corvette, but it's okay to say vet. And I want to enlighten the audience. Not okay to say Porsche. It is Porsche. It's Porsche. Only barbarians and the proletariat. And the bourgeoisie. But that way, when you say that, you look enlightened. You know, so,
Bobby.
I always suspected the closet. You were a closet gearhead, Frank. Now I know.
I'll say it. Purple Porsche there. There you go. Purple Porsche.
And we're going to have to take it out on the street, and I will take you from 0 to 69 in about 6 seconds.
Oh, there we go.
I get in trouble for saying things like that, so I shouldn't say that, because it gets me in trouble.
There's a certain part to that.
Oh, now the hot air.
I got to clean up my ass. I really got to clean up my ass. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed great. Michael, it was great storytelling. It really was.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Bobby. And Sawa, what did you think?
What a ride. The police did not stop you? I'm just being silly. No, I was really curious about what is the 69 highway? I really don't know.
I'm not
going to
go.
You know, a serious thing. I'll be very brief. There is a Route 69. There is an actual Route 69, you know. Most people don't realize that if you look on the Midas, the map, there is a Route 69 thing.
Yeah, okay. Just like there's an Intercourse Pennsylvania, too.
Yeah. Oh,
one of the most stolen signs in the highway.
You guys are killing, will you? Okay, I'm going to hush.
And Lou, what did you think of the ride?
Well, it's not safe to be going 75 kissing on a freeway.
When does safety ever matter in a case of love?
Well, that's why you pull over in Lover's Lane. So she can fill your tank up and let her kisses fill up the, you know, let it fill the gasoline.
Yeah, you know.
Because see, look. You have to watch the road, and your hands are on the steering column, and your hand, you know, your foot, depending if you're, like, you drive a standard or an automatic, and standard's even harder. You want your hands on her instead of
both feet?
Yeah. Hands on him instead.
Well, that's why you have a stick shift there.
Yeah.
Well,
congratulations,
the stick,
no. AI. She just lost control of the program.
There we go. Let's move on now. We can move on.
Frank, I love the top destroyed
them.
Let's move on. We should move on.
Would you like to say anything about your poem, Frank?
Yeah, I'll be brief, my friend. First of all, thank you for. I know that the other poem I sent was late, and I didn't have time to look up for any other thing when you told me about the other one. This is just another rendition of mine of I would say my tributes to Prince. There were several I did afterwards, and this was just basically takes off on the song "Little Red Corvette," and of course it is a central piece. But I like having fun with this, and it just took me to that direction there. Of the purple porch, and it's all fun, you know. I know everyone takes it in a different direction there, but it's just, that's why we have our imaginations there.
I think we all were going down the same direction, Frank.
Excellent storytelling. It was great storytelling.
Oh, there we go.
Right, absolutely.
We'll all end up in the same route then.
it's one innuendo after another.
All right.
You absolutely.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, dear. Gray, I was going to call you Thomas. Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem. Appreciate it, you, Frank. Okay, so I have the next write-up. It's by C.L. Howard, and it's called Coffee with Dawn. You came to me early, or perhaps late. There was a dampness to the air. I met you with coffee at our usual place and talked for the better part of an hour. While you quietly listened, you never were one for conversation, but you seemed to enjoy the sound of my voice. After a while, it became crowded, others chirping in, drowning out my words. This seemed to be a daily event, unless, of course, it was too cold. Those days, it was just the two of us. Like clockwork, I would finish my coffee, now cool with the passing of time, and you would rise wordlessly to go about your business. Tomorrow, then, I would ask, knowing your voiceless answer to be yes. It was always yes. Tomorrow, then. And boom. But I really liked it. It was a beautiful personification of the morning. And I thought it was just beautifully expressed. A cup of coffee in the morning sun with a bit of conversation. The chirping. Oh, that's just the morning birds. But beautiful, right? What did you think, Thomas?
I like the way this works on several different levels, because in one way it could be taken as just the greeting of the morning over your first cup of coffee, and some days it's noisier than others. And it could be someone who is totally lost in an unrequited love and never will really wake up from the dream they've created, but are perfectly happy to live in the in that false world. And there's probably a couple more that I haven't caught on to yet. I like this because of the simplicity of the language. And the way it leaves so much open to all sorts of possible interpretations. Very well done.
Well said. Thank you, Thomas. And Bobby, what did you think?
We talked about the simple things in one of the poems earlier, and I can't think of anything that's more elemental than us from someone that you care about first thing in the morning and start your day with a cup of coffee. Knowing that your day starts and ends the same way across from this person that you care about. It's bookending a day with the way he says, like clockwork, I finish my coffee, now cool with the passing of time. And how many of us have sat across from someone with coffee and realize that because of the conversation, the coffee's gone completely cold, don't care. So this is such a delightful piece.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Sawa, what did you think?
I agree with Tom. It seems like it's one way conversation. As you said, you seem to enjoy the sounds of my voice and then drowning out. And then she says at the end, knowing your voiceless answer to be yes. But there's almost like they meet, but there's only he's happy with this moment, but there's really no return. And it's beautiful. It's simple. It's tell a story, sad story, and at the same time, because when there's no return, it must be sad. He said tomorrow, then he hoped that tomorrow maybe will change, but it seems like a repetitive scenario. Very beautifully done and beautifully read.
Thank you, Sawa. Louis, what did you think?
My pleasure.
Yeah. This I was just reading some of the comments. This she gave him the goal. She said, "Your explanation gave the poem a layer of meaning that made it more amazing and impressive. I love how you personified the sun and created this sense of peacefulness and intimacy. I wouldn't have guessed your companion was the sun, but I noticed the hints in your poem once I read your explanation." This is fantastic.
Wow.
You know, because, you know, I mean, that's the first thing I do. The first thing I do when I get up is I look for the sun. I look for the sun.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I want is a cup of coffee. And, you know, to just, whether it's with the sun I'm with or with a human being, you know, before the birds start singing and chirping and start talking and putting their two cents in, at least to, you know, listen to my whatever I had to say before I go out on my day. And just like they said, go whistle while you work. Just, this is just pure happiness, satisfaction.
Well said. Great comment, Lou. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, I have to say that I agree with everything that's been said. And what's so wonderful about this whole poem is that the whole notion there of, you know, sometimes we, you know, when we're not talking to someone else and we're, or we're not talking to ourselves, we're talking to nature. And that's something I at times admit I've done before when I'm out and about with nature. I'll actually talk to, you know, a little bit to the sun, a bit to the sky, a bit to the clouds. And it just seems to me that it's just refreshing at times because you know that although the voice is not going to be that of ours, it does answer at times. You know, the breeze comes in, you know, the sun ray. You know, nature will respond in its way, you know, perhaps not in words, but it does respond. So in that regard, you know, a poem like this just makes you think about, you know, the simplicity of life and how we should enjoy life. And, you know, as I said before, enjoy the wonders of nature. That's what, to me, is very much special. But I did enjoy that quality in the poem. I'm not a coffee person, I have to admit. I'm more of hot cocoa with churros, but I thought the poem was great.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, I got the last right here and closest to the board. And if you wouldn't mind, Lee, would you read that for me, please?
Okay.
I can read my part. And this is called Happy Belated Birthday, Phil. She's always around where dreams and wishes are abound. Fancies take flight in her group of late night.
You want me to be Mindy's? She's
yes.
That flaming tress, sits in blazing bright, topping ready smiles with supportive delight. Irish humor cued to spark new block talk styles at night with poetic spotlights talents excite. We all cheer her on. Setting treads, others follow. Jeans leads LMP a long way. So take a deep breath and enjoy your special day. Bobby? Or Sawa?
Okay. Luyu, Athens,
Luyu,
Athens, Greece, talks, cooling waterfalls, leaves, promenade, funding the airs, subconsciousness, clouded secret, unwrapping the sky's wilderness, beating silently as my aching heart receives what has slipped into oblivion. Should I don't know. It's still you, sorry. Lots
yeah,
of
keep going.
Through
yes.
Darkening sun rays, encouraging to transport darkness, tying by an ancient citrus of literally leaves, healing feeds my inner core. There's Dexter.
I'll read Dexter.
Wait. Frank has
that.
Frank or Tom?
Oh,
you,
okay. All right, Frank, would you mind reading Dexter?
Yes, we're forever grateful and LNP faithful. Our community of writers and all the creativity inspires. So in oxymoron way tonight, we wish you happy birthday.
Now, Bobby.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
I think she dropped because I heard her talking to somebody, maybe her cat. Tom, you haven't read yet. Could you read Victoria?
Okay. You always are a driving force to keep scattered poets all on course, giving us a humble home, a place to write and to roam. I wish your blessings overflow. Happy birthday, dearest soul.
Okay,
okay,
I'll read
great,
the
back to you.
You always are a driving force to keep scattered poets all on course, giving us a humble home, a place to write and to roam. I wish your blessing overflow. Happy birthday, dearest soul.
Okay. Neutron, you are always are a driving force to keep scattered poets all on course, giving us a humble home, a place to write and to roam. I wish your blessing overflow. Happy birthday, dearest soul. Okay. Who's going to read it? Ephesiana.
Ephesiana?
Okay.
Providing poets with a platform, proof words have the power to transform. Happy birthday to fill my eyes, thankful for all she provides.
Frank?
Yes. Has the earth again orbited her small star for you? Did Philadelphian green begin anew to color and fall? Through words and phrases rarely turned, easy still, our voices ring. Through airwaves you fashion to celebrate your bold, persistent years turning cellar.
And Thomas.
Bed knobs and broomsticks and witches with ice picks. Late night and groupies find faces with rictus. Ghosties and goalies bearing transient strings. These are a few of her favorite things. Rubies and sapphires and soft marshmallow pyres. Bombay gin crackers and chocolatey squires. Werewolves and wampum trolling, nanking these film eyes with her favorite things.
That was a great job, everyone. Thank you for reading. I appreciate you all. But, yeah, that was a wonderful. It's a belated poem. Her birthday was on the 9th of October. I'm just getting to it now. But it took a few days to get all the rights in. And yeah, happy belated birthday, Phil. Love you. And I'd like to say thank you, everybody, that called in tonight. Thank you, Lawrence, Thomas. Bobby, Sawa, Liu, Frank, appreciate you all. Much love, everybody.
Much love, guys.
Happy
love
birthday.
Guys. Besitos.
Besitos.
Good night, everybody.
Maranito.
Love you. Stay on more.
Buenas noches.
You forgot.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Marranitos y churros.
Y marranitos.
Ay, qué rica. Do you guys know what a churro is? Do you guys know what a churro is?
I know, of course.
How about you, Greg?
Yummy.
Yeah.
Greg?
It's those,
you know what
a
churro is?
Dessert.
It's a Mexican cinnamon and sugar pastry.
And it's long. But do they put cajeta in it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or caramel.
It
can be caramel. Chocolate. So many things. Sugar, yum. You made me hungry.
Okay,
now.
Well... Cajeta, they make it with wine, and it's goat's milk, and it tastes better than caramel. It is delicious. You have to at least taste it
Don't knock it till you tried it, because there's sheep all over Europe, and I don't care. I like it in Mexico. It's some good stuff. Of course, I didn't know it was made with sheep until I got older, but...
Well, everyone...
Delicious. Good stuff.
Some churros.
Yeah. Yes.
Some hot cocoa and coffee afterwards.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Besitos, besitos. Yeah. Love you guys.
Take care.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Buenas noches. Take care, everyone.
Buenas noches.
Bon nuit, so
on. Buenas noches.
And drive.
Good night, everyone.
Everyone's safe on the road. Take care.
Oh, my goodness.
Especially on this road 69. Okay, good night, everybody.
Take care.
You too. Bye.